Welcome to In Layman's Terms, a podcast dedicated to stories of discipleship and putting scripture to use in our daily lives. I'm your host, Todd Seifert. I'm the Communications Director for the Great Plains Conference of the United Methodist Church, comprised of just fewer than 1,000 churches throughout Kansas and Nebraska. I'm also a certified lay minister in the United Methodist Church, so what you hear on this show truly comes to you in layman's terms. I have more than 25 years experience teaching the Bible to everyone from teenagers to 90-somethings, and I served as a journalist for 20 years prior to entering ministry. So I'm excited to share with you stories of disciples in action and to explore with you what the Bible has to teach us in the 21st century. Some episodes focus on a person or church doing great things to serve as the hands and feet of Christ. Some episodes feature interviews with experts who can help us along our faith journey. Still others include short reflections on Scripture. Thank you for joining me. The United Methodist Church is truly blessed by agencies and organizations that provide support for our many ministries. In the Great Plains, we have two foundations, the Kansas Methodist Foundation and the Nebraska United Methodist Foundation, that provide support to varying degrees for ministries in the local church, from outreach to technology to many other aspects of ministry in between. So when I received an email from my friend, Reverend Dr. Richard Randolph, telling me about three ministries that were doing things, well, just a little bit differently, I decided I needed to talk to the people involved and tell their stories. Richard was pastor at Christ United Methodist Church in Lincoln, Nebraska when we first met in 2015. He started just in the past year as the director of stewardship for the Nebraska United Methodist Foundation. He shared the stories of a ministry in Lincoln, one in Scotts Bluff and the surrounding area there, and yet another near North Platte. In this episode, we're going to hear about these ministries and hear how the Nebraska Foundation was able to lend a hand via a series of grants that it provides. There's a lot of information to share here, so let's get right to it. I want to start with Pastor Karen Lamb, who serves churches in the rural areas around Lincoln and who started her own nonprofit called Loaves and Fishes a few years back. Here's Karen. I'm joined now by Pastor Karen Lamb. She's currently serving in Burr and Douglas in the Blue River District in Nebraska. I've known Karen since about 2015-ish. That's when I moved to the Great Plains Conference. Her husband was actually the lay leader at the church that my wife was serving at, Lincoln Havelock. And Karen, you came out of that church,
yes,
right? So
yes.
That's your background. But I happen to know something else about Karen that's going to be very pertinent to what we are talking about here today, and that's that she's very good with food. Tell us a little bit about your background to start us off, because you've had some storefronts,
yes,
in Lincoln.
Yes, and really we have to go back to when I was about 8 years old.
Okay.
My dad's parents moved from Milford to Caro, which is where I grew up, and lived right next door to us. And she was my caregiver because my mom worked. And Grandma Sadie is who we have to thank for my cooking and baking expertise. She took me under her wing, and she was a stern taskmistress, though.
Okay. Learned the tough way.
I did. I learned to do it her way, and over the years have moderated that some. She's probably looking down and shaking her finger at me, but.
Okay. So the reason we're talking to you, as I mentioned in the intro, we are kind of looking at some things that the Nebraska United Methodist Foundation has been involved with. And one of the things that they are working with you in partnership on is Loaves and Fishes. What is Loaves and Fishes? How did it come about?
Okay, so Loaves and Fishes is a small local nonprofit based in Lincoln. Our purpose is to provide nutritious food, support, and hygiene items to homeless and near homeless. What we found in Lincoln is that housing is expensive. And for people living on disability or working minimum wage jobs or maybe just working part-time, it's very hard to make those dollars stretch. So 3 days a week, at St. Paul's United Methodist downtown,
okay,
we offer a meal. And we have no requirements or restrictions. We don't ask for IDs. We don't ask for any kind of a service card like some of the other nonprofits, the bigger ones here in town. Anyone that's hungry can come and eat. And we offer a couple choices. When I was envisioning all of this, I didn't want to be the stereotypical soup kitchen where you come in with your tray and you get a spoonful of something slapped on there and that's what you get. I did not want to do that. So over the years, I think we're in our fifth year of Loaves and Fishes. We've tweaked things, but people do get a choice every day. We do have some people who have dietary restrictions, either cultural or religious. So we try to make sure that we have choices every day that respect that, because we're all about giving people respect and seeing people. I mean, if you have ever studied anything about the homeless population, they don't feel like people see them, right? When you are walking down the street and you see a homeless person, what's the first thing you do? You look the other way.
The neck turns.
Right? No eye contact, because they might talk to me. And what would I say? Well, hello? How are you doing? But it's been a learning experience for me. If people would have told me 6 years ago that I would start a nonprofit to serve the homeless, I'm not sure what I would have said, but I would not have agreed with them. So it's just something that I guess I could, like my cousin who's a Baptist minister, I would say the Lord laid a burden on my heart.
Okay.
That this is what I should do.
And so this has been going on for a few years, but there's been some change and some growth with the help of the Nebraska United Methodist Foundation. So tell us a little bit about what the dream was for you and how the foundation got involved and assisted.
Well, since Connection Point got its start, I have been kind of dabbling in that as well, because the churches I serve are small. They're in rural areas, and as with many churches whose congregation has aged, they're tired. Mm-hmm. I don't know how else to put it. They're tired, and so they're not up for a lot of mission work. So, and I felt led to still do that when I was moved out there. So Connection Point offered me a way to still feel that, you know, fit that need of that I had. And Beth Graberholt and I worked very well together. I volunteered in the pantry. We did a lot of dreaming about what might be possible at Connection Point. And one of those things was a commercial kitchen, to somehow update the kitchen they had in the basement. You know, make it available for people. Either teach people how to cook with what the food pantry was offering, or help people better their situation by getting skills to get them a job in the food industry. We just really brainstormed. Well, it never came to fruition for whatever reason.
So I'm going to pause for just a second. If folks don't know what Connection Point is, it's a place for ministry outreach. It's literally kitty corner from the East Campus of the University of Nebraska, which is where a lot of the agricultural education happens. There's a really high-class dormitory there. There's a lot of stuff going on in that area. But it was a former United Methodist Church building that was sitting vacant. And as I understand the story, Beth Graberholt, who's a student at the University of Nebraska at the time, walked by and said, "Why is that building not being used?" And so Connection Point became a dream of hers, became a vision then of Christ United Methodist Church and throughout Lincoln, really. And so a lot of things go on there. There's like the pantry is one thing. I know there's some educational things that happen there. From a community standpoint, I know that there's some ebb and flow to it. Some things come in and then they leave and that kind of thing.
Yes. But,
so I just want people to understand what this was, so that when you say upgrade the kitchen, they understand there was something there, but it was a small church kitchen.
Right.
Right. Not an industrial type of thing. So sorry to interrupt, but I just want to make sure people knew what that was.
Thank you. So when I heard that Beth was leaving Connection Point, I reached out to Richard Randolph, who was pastor at Christ at that time, and we started doing some brainstorming. And I really thought that we were going to get it done this time. And then when Richard came to the foundation, Andy Frazier came to Christ United Methodist, we continued talks. And Andy and Catherine, his wife, who is now in charge of Connection Point part-time, were also really excited about this idea and the ministry that could happen. So I started doing some planning, met with the health department to see if it would be possible to do what I wanted to do.
A little pre-work to make sure that they weren't going to put some big roadblock up that would make
Correct,
it
because money.
Difficult. Right.
Right?
Right.
It's always about money, unfortunately. I had, my nonprofit had gotten a grant a couple years ago that I was able to put into savings because our funding, our donations were up that year. So that money is what got us started in this endeavor because I had to buy equipment. There was a little bit of renovations, not much actually, that needed to be done. And then that's where the foundation came in with this grant cycle. Richard encouraged me to apply. And so we wrote a proposal and got funded. And what the dream is, and we're getting close to fruition, is that it'll be a commercial kitchen that will be available to people in the community who are maybe just starting out in some kind of a food endeavor. Here in Nebraska, we have the cottage bakery law now where you can produce things in your home, but there are limits. So there are some people who are now ready to move to the next step and they need a commercial kitchen, but commercial kitchen space is at a premium here in Lincoln and it's expensive. So what we are doing is forming a co-op. So the people that would use the kitchen will actually be owners. They will buy in at a very low cost and then they will pay an hourly expense sharing fee. And the money from the foundation will help us support that. If someone just can't get together enough money, then we'll subsidize with that.
So in a way you can develop some scholarship types of things.
Yes.
So imagine the scenario for this would be, you know, somebody started off something in their home kitchen, but with the law, you probably can only produce so much, right? And then health issues come into effect. And
yes.
So that's really where the commercial side of this comes in, the
right.
commercial kitchen.
Right. And the reason that I really want to do it as a co-op is because of cost here in Lancaster County. If I have a commercial kitchen and I'm renting it to someone, they have to pay all the licensing fees that I have already paid.
Mm. Okay.
Even to rent that space. So as a co-op, we're all owners, one licensing fee. So that was the impetus behind
nice.
That.
So let's dream a little bit. You know, a year from now, we'll say things work really well and they go fast. So a year from now, what does it look like?
Well, I hope it looks like four or five entrepreneurs working on bettering, you know, their financial situation. And part of this is, too, that we want to make sure that the people that we help have a heart for helping others. I mean, that's going to be the basis of this, mm-hmm. that you have to appreciate and be willing to pay forward what you're getting. Is that, I mean, that is at the heart of Connection Point, of helping others. Not just coming in and, you know, getting food out of the pantry, but, you know, telling others, hey, you can come to this pantry, or just doing acts of kindness because someone has been kind to you.
So. Nice. It sounds like it's kind of an evolution of a ministry, in a way. So we tend to think of ministry in the traditional sense, we'll put it that way, of more of a mercy kind of thing. So somebody's hungry, we're going to have a food pantry, which is great for like that week or 2 weeks that that food carries them through, but then the cycle continues. Whereas if you have someone who is able to start maybe a small business, all of a sudden they can at least partially become self-sustaining. And the opportunity to use a building that's already there, that's already an outreach to the community, it seems like that should be a rational partnership, but we don't do that very often.
Right, right. And that's why, you know, I feel like my involvement with Connection Point was very purposeful. You know, I didn't know it to begin with. I liked Beth, I liked Richard, and it seemed like a good way to, again, meet my need to do some mission work. But you're right that it's more than just mercy. There has to be a justice component, I think, because otherwise we never solve a problem. I mean, people are hungry and they need to be fed. They need to be. But we've, at Loaves and Fishes, we have always tried to advocate, to work behind the scenes, to work on the problems. Why are people homeless? Why do they have to pay so much in rent and they run out of money before the month is done? You know, why are these things happening in society? And, you know, we're not going to solve that in, you know, my lifetime anyway. But somebody has to work on it. You know, if we don't, we'll never get anywhere.
Right. Just to kind of close, I want to make sure people understand that, I mean, this was a vision that you had. Because of your nonprofit, you had some seed money, but the foundation kind of helped you get over the hump. I just kind of want to let you talk to folks out there that are maybe they have some idea for ministry. What was it like to work with the foundation, and what would be your words of encouragement for them to pursue it?
Well, it was very easy. This is not the first time that my nonprofit has been granted money from the foundation. Several years ago, I think maybe our second year in existence, we got a grant from the same fund to offer free laundry for people. And then we expanded that into free showers at one of our community centers that's close to downtown. And we did get that grant renewed for the second year. So I knew the process was easy. And, you know, I'm just glad that Richard said, hey, this is probably an idea that you should submit a request for. And again, it's so easy. It is nothing like other grant processes. Basically, if you have an idea, you write it down, you put who's going to be helped, why you think it's a good idea, and you send it in.
Right. I mean, certainly you got to make your case for it so that the money is spent properly, but it's not the same as going to like a large multinational type of a nonprofit funding or a fund that where there's like 20 layers.
Right.
We're just so everybody's aware, we are in the Nebraska United Methodist Foundation office recording this today. It's a former bank building. There's glass everywhere. You can see everybody from where we're sitting for the most part. And so it's a much smaller operation, provides people with an opportunity to, they get to know you. I mean, besides, right? I mean, that's one of the things is they get to understand, okay, here's what this ministry is. Here's why this is pertinent. Here's why this money should go this way. And then they really get to know the people behind it.
Yes. And I would just say, you know, if you have a dream, don't give up. Don't give up. I mean, this project it's been longer than I had hoped. I'm learning a lot about building permits, and we had to rezone the building. So I'm learning things I did not want to know, but it's important to keep going. I know that it'll be finished and it'll be great. In a year, we should touch base and see what's happening.
Sounds good. Well, Pastor Karen Lamb, thanks so much for joining us on In Layman's Terms.
And thank you.
Setting up that ministry may have been complicated, but applying for the grant that helped get it off the ground from the Nebraska United Methodist Foundation was not complicated at all. Here now is Christine Roberts. She's the executive director of the foundation.
Well, we have our ministry grant program open every fall, it opens in the summer and the grants are handed out after our October board meeting. But Loaves and Fishes was stood out among all the other grants as a great program with their new community kitchen that they're doing. And it was just a great way to show what the churches could be doing to help out their surrounding community. And that's really the purpose of the ministry grants in the first place, is we want to see these churches in action. What are you doing to show Jesus' love for your surrounding community? And Loaves and Fishes really was a shining example of their co-op kitchen project that they're doing and how they're really thinking outside the box to improve the community that surrounds their church.
I guess I'm going to ask you to talk a little bit more about how this was a little bit outside the box and how that's something that the foundation really gets excited about.
Well, we always get excited about for outside the box ideas. That's really the whole point. We can't always do things the way they've always been done. Times are changing and we have to do things differently to bring more people into our churches to help spread the word of God's love. So what Connection Point's doing is, I mean, how many other places are doing that where you've got this small business, but you don't have the startup funds or you don't have the investors or you don't have anyone supporting you? But now we've got this Connection Point, the Loaves and Fishes ministry, that is providing an opportunity for very low cost to get your business going, to get it started. And it's already a ministry anyway, so it's already helping people who are low income around come in and serve them. It's really focused on what can we do for the community that there isn't somebody else already serving that need. Mm-hmm. And that's where the outside the box comes in, that it gets our stewardship committee and our board of directors really excited about helping to fund this. Because, again, it is showing what us as United Methodists can do that's different from what other nonprofits are trying to do.
Karen and I talked a little bit about the process, and so I kind of want to unwrap that for people. If they think they're going to get involved in something that's way above their heads and they're not going to be able to figure out how to do it, we're not going to apply because that's going to be too much work, and I'm not going to understand it. And I understand why. I've seen some grant applications that go on forever and ever and ever. You just showed me a one-page front and back.
Yes,
application form.
So, I printed it off.
So let's have you walk people through what is a process if they've got a great idea for an outside-the-box type ministry. What do they need to do?
And it doesn't have to be outside the box either. Any ministry that you're doing in your church, please apply. But when the time comes for the ministry grant program to be open, you just go to our website, numf.org, and to the Scholarships and Grants tab, and you'll find the ministry grant tab that will have the application uploaded. It's a fillable PDF, so you don't have to do too much work. And again, they're pretty short blanks.
And what that does mean is you have to download it to your computer, but once it's on your computer, you should be able to type into the blanks. I've never applied for one myself, but I've heard good things about the Nebraska United Methodist Foundation and how it actually works. The fillable PDF sometimes doesn't work. Theirs actually works from what I've been told. So,
it is true that some lines you get to the end and it starts making the type smaller and smaller, or it keeps going and has a little plus sign, and then we can't see what the words are when you print it out. So always double check that. It's one page. It's front and back. So I guess technically it's two pages. But you just fill it out when the time comes. You get it submitted before the application deadline, which is September 30th of every year. And then the process after that, after we get your application, is it'll go in front of our stewardship committee at our October board meeting, which is usually the third Tuesday in October, but that has moved around recently, depending on when orders and fellowship actually takes place. But sometime in October, we'll have our October board meeting where those ministry grants will be approved first by the stewardship committee that really goes into detail with each application and the grant request, and then it's presented to the full board who has the opportunity to ask questions and then approve all the grant requests. And we have almost always approved all of the grant requests that we receive. Maybe they're not fully funded, but almost every time everybody gets something because we want to support all of our local ministries here in Nebraska.
Well, and because you're a much smaller shop, we describe for everybody that we can see everybody because of the windows here. It's, you know, it's a small enough operation. If you get a grant application that you have a lot of questions about, you're able to call them ahead of time and say, hey, can you flush this out a little bit? Can you help explain this a little bit better? I would imagine that that one-on-one type of approach probably is something that they wouldn't get from a much larger operation somewhere in New York or Chicago or someplace like that.
Yes, on both ends of the application process. Before you even submit it, feel free to call us. We can talk you through it. And then it does... Sometimes we do get to a point where we don't feel like the stewardship committee has enough in front of them to make a decision. And so we might call you after you've submitted your application, even after the deadline has passed, to help you flesh it out a little bit if you haven't, if we feel like that it hasn't been done. And so even if you feel like you haven't really filled it out, but the deadline's coming up, still get it into us. We can still help you get it so it's presentable to the stewardship committee. You can still possibly receive a full grant even if you don't feel like you've filled it out completely because, yes, we are a small shop. Any of us here can help you or get you to a person who can help you, and that's what we're here for.
What are some of the things that your stewardship committee is looking for?
The first primary thing is it helping your local community? Is this ministry something that your church is organizing to help your local community? And then, is it promoting your church? Is it letting the people in your community know that this is coming from your United Methodist Church so that it's great publicity for the United Methodist Church and maybe that might pull in new congregation members, which is always a high priority for your churches anyway? And then... The amount of money is always important.
Well, there is the reality of you're giving out funds that have been donated.
There's a limited amount of money.
There's only so much amount of money
to go
around.
That's a great way to say it.
Yeah.
There's a limited amount of money. Sometimes the applications we receive get up into the tens of thousands of dollars in their request. And almost always those are the ones that are not fully funded because we do want to make sure everybody gets something. And so the grants usually range from around $1,500 to $5,000, and those are more likely to get fully funded. But I do always tell people when they call and ask, please do fill out for whatever you need for your ministry. If it's tens of thousands of dollars, but we only receive your application that year, it might get fully funded.
That's
we
right.
don't know.
That's right.
So that is another thing that the stewardship committee really considers is how much this ministry needs and will even a little bit help it or is the ministry not going to move forward if it's not fully funded in mm-hmm. the first place? So that's another thing the stewardship committee looks at. But primarily it's what's the ministry doing for the community? And what does it do to really highlight how great your church or ministry is?
Because there's a reality, you might receive the full ask and be able to do everything, or it may provide some of the seed that you need to then go out to other donors and say, see, the Nebraska United Methodist Foundation believes in this enough that they've given us this amount of money. It may help with fundraising efforts in other ways to help you get to your final number.
Yes, I mean, absolutely.
Those are just some possibilities.
Absolutely.
So we focused a lot on grants right now, and there are a couple of other grants that you've been involved with, but as you were good, kind enough to share with me, not so much because of the way they did the grant, but because of the ministries that they're involved in. We have a couple of others that I want to touch on, and then we're going to talk to some of them a little bit later in this episode. So one of them is a children and students ministry at The Vine, UMC, which is in Scotts Bluff. So Scotts Bluff became a hub and joined with some other United Methodist churches from Mitchell, Morrill, and Henry, which were independent on their own, United Methodist churches. Now they are functioning, Scottsbluff and the three of them, as one United Methodist congregation, basically with four campuses. We're used to saying that, like, for Resurrection, which is, of course, our largest church in our denomination based in Leawood, Kansas. But it can happen elsewhere, folks, even in, like, the Scottsbluff area on a much smaller scale. I guess, Christine, would you mind telling us a little bit about how the foundation got involved with them and how you were able to help them kind of move forward with that grouping of four churches?
Yes, they applied for a grant for their curriculum, for their adult and children Sunday schools and the ministries that they have there. And they hadn't exactly decided on which curriculum they wanted to move forward with when they applied for the grant. Again, we don't need to know all those details. Please apply for grants, even if you don't know which curriculum you would like. But if you have a general idea of what it costs, we can help. But they were looking at a variety of different curriculums, really, but leaning towards GROW, which will cost them $1,000 per year per group. And then they also needed to update their technology in order to get that curriculum going in their church as well. And so we gave them a grant to purchase that curriculum, and then some of the funds would go towards internet and smart televisions.
Yeah, the days of just buying the book they're not completely done, but I, as somebody who's my background as far as the local church, I preach every week now, but I was for a long time the Christian education guy. I can tell you that the videos and things like that definitely augment things, and so I understand why they would want to do that, especially when you get out to like Western Nebraska, it gets pretty remote pretty quickly. It's tough to bring in the resources and expertise that you might be able to find like in a Lincoln or Omaha or someplace like that, Kansas City or Wichita, larger communities. You have more to draw on in the local area. So I totally understand that. When we talk about the Vine and the things that they decided to do, what was the feeling here at the foundation when you saw what they were trying to accomplish?
Well, asking for funds for curriculum is pretty standard in a typical ministry grant. So it wasn't the ask specifically that got the board very excited. What got the board excited was how the Vine came to be and thinking outside the box of how to do ministry differently. One church with four locations isn't something that we've seen in Nebraska. So it just got us very excited for this might be the future. This might be what we need to tell our churches that they could do to really pool their resources and do something to make sure they're financially stable and can continue their ministries, but again, in a different way than things have always been done before. And that's what got the board really excited and wanting to hear more about how the Vine is operating and what Scottsbluff, Mitchell, Morrill, and Henry do on a weekly, monthly basis to make sure their church continues.
It's not like this was a large amount of money.
No.
But for churches that size, it's a significant amount of money. They would not be able to do this if the foundation hadn't, or somebody else hadn't been able to provide them with those funds. And what I really like about this story, and we've written stories about them on the conference website, greatplainsumc.org. But what I really am excited about that grouping is it's acting as one church, four campuses that ties four congregations together now. They have within themselves an opportunity to work together on something. And the fact that they chose to do something with their Christian education component, that's a very traditional kind of thing in the local church, done now a very untraditional way.
Right.
I caught up with Reverend Craig Collins, pastor of The Vine. He filled me in on the goals behind the curriculum the church selected and how the foundation helped launch a big enhancement to the church's ministry. Here's Craig.
We first started combining our ministries a couple of years ago because the Scottsbluff is a pretty good-sized church, and we have a pretty dynamic youth group. We were having 50 kids coming on a Wednesday night, but we had some issues. We didn't always have very good curriculum. Our teachers were kind of left on their own to figure out what they wanted to teach that week. And well, that's causes a lot of problems. So there's no consistency from age group to age group. We have no control over what's being taught. There's all sorts of varieties of curriculum out there. So,
and it causes stress for the person trying to lead it too, right? Because they come up with what they're going to do. Yeah.
Right. They kind of lose that passion and the desire to lead if they don't, if they have no assistance, no help. So we moved in with we invited the churches of Mitchell, Morrill, and Henry to join us for youth group. And we were going over and picking up kids and bringing them to Scotts Bluff. And we utilized their some of their leaders as well. And that was really kind of the start of combining our assets. In their churches, they had tried to do youth group. But when you've got a kindergartner, a third grader, and a junior in high school, it's kind of a mix of an odd youth group. So when they could combine with ours, just numbers alone made it better. The kids were just ecstatic about it. Their group loved coming over to our church. And our church loved having them because they brought some leaders as well, and it just made it better all around. And so then, once we merged our churches, we thought about how can we do ministry better. Our churches were all in decline; every one of them is losing more members every year than we're gaining. We're just not keeping up with the death rate in our churches. We're older congregations, and we need some new life. And we thought, how can we reinvigorate this life cycle? You know, churches have a life cycle like people do, and they're born, they grow, they plateau, and then they decline and they die. And unless something's done along that path to reinvigorate life, that's an inevitable course. And so we thought, let's combine our assets. Let's combine our leadership teams, and let's really focus on a mission of making disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world. That our future depends on getting the word out and growing our church, and that really starts with our youth groups and our small group studies, a discipleship plan for all ages, beginning with our youth. So we felt like we need a solid curriculum that we can utilize that will engage the kids, be fun, have a lesson, have some consistency from one age group to the next, so we can get them covered from get some basic foundational understandings along the way. So by the time they get to confirmation class, they've got some sense of what Christianity is and what a life with Jesus is. So we did get a new curriculum, and it's called Grow, and we like it because of some of those reasons. But also, there's things we can send home with the kids, questions that parents can ask their children throughout the week, table discussions that they can have if they ever get to share a meal together. It's not just going to impact the kids; it's going to impact the families. And what we hope to have happen from all of that is that we engage the whole family. So we don't just have children coming on Wednesday night, but we start seeing them and their parents on Sunday. We're not there yet. Wednesday night we'll have 60 kids, and Sunday morning we might have 3 kids in church. So we've got a lot of work to do yet, but we think that this plot process will foster more involvement with our families.
So you're planting seeds, though, with those families. Where did the United Methodist the Nebraska United Methodist Foundation come into play?
Yeah. So the foundation has Gifts of the Heart grants for churches. It's a ministry grant that comes through the foundation to help churches in their ministries. And so I wrote a letter, an application, and it kind of explained how they could help us. And that's really with the curriculum and a lot of, with this Grow curriculum that we ended up purchasing. It starts out with a video series and a person talking to the kids. And so you kind of need some technology in each of your classrooms. which we didn't have. So there's some cost there for screens and DVD players or internet access, mounts on, mount the screen on the wall, and so we there's some expenses there. So I just laid out all those expenses and asked them for some help, and in the past, their grants were running around $2,000 per church. I applied for four, not knowing for sure what we'd get, and we ended up getting a $4,000 check from the foundation, which is just a huge help.
And you kind of hinted at this a little bit earlier, but if you could share with folks like what types of results you're already seeing by virtue of having this ministry tool.
I just talked to a mom this morning. We sent home with the kids one of the craft projects. It had a fish that they cut out and drew on, but it had a saying on it, a scripture verse. And she said her son was so excited he got home with that and showed it to her, and they hung it in his bedroom, and he looks at it every morning and he repeats the phrase that's on the wall art. And so, just stuff like that, trying to engage the families throughout the week. The end goal is, from my perspective, is, well, it's multi-leveled, I suppose, to help those kids to grow in their faith and love for Christ, to know who Jesus is, to develop a faith journey, to be more fully engaged. And then for the families, I hope it impacts them too, so that they can start making their walk with Christ a bigger priority.
There's one more ministry that I want to tell you about. It's from Brady United Methodist Church. Disaffiliations left this church near North Platte isolated and without the ability to have its own pastor. So the congregation worked with its fellow United Methodists in North Platte and at the Nebraska United Methodist Foundation to find a solution. Again, here's the foundation's executive director, Christine Roberts.
They have needed to have a sermon on Sundays, and they don't have a pastor. It's actually Pastor Michael Evans at North Platte that had been recording his sermon at North Platte, and then Brady would play that sermon the following Sunday with their local congregation. And so what they applied for a grant for was to essentially upgrade all of their technology, since they didn't have an in-house pastor anymore, so that they could have the services available to accommodate this, again, new way of church. It's similar to the Vine, where they're thinking outside the box on a new way to do church. And so they are having what they call a satellite service. So the Vine did a one church, four campuses. Brady is doing a satellite church with North Platte, essentially. And so they needed a new TV for an overflow room for the church. They needed an iPad for connecting to the satellite church so that they could see the satellite church's sermon. And then they updated their sound system so everyone could hear the TV. And then they got what's called a Mevo, which is another technology piece, and then the stand to go with it. And so it was actually quite a large grant request, just under $10,000. But we actually, again, we it all depends on how many applications we get. We got about half as many grants this year as we did the year before. And therefore, we did have enough in our funds that we were able to fully fund all of this technology for Brady. So they are still having church the way they've always had church, just, again, not with a physical person standing in front of them, which is impractical now, but at least they still have an ordained pastor that they're getting their message from.
Mm-hmm. And just the fact that they are able to do it that day. I mean, one of the problems with recording, most of you know who are regular listeners, I serve a small church in North Lawrence, Kansas. It is tough to stay on the liturgical calendar if you're a week behind, so all the things like Christ the King Sunday, it's a certain Sunday, but you're doing it a week after. I haven't talked to Mike, but I got to imagine that was kind of probably a nightmare in planning sermons to try to make sure that he was trying to fulfill what they needed in Brady as well as in North Platte. He's the kind of guy who's going to try to please both of them, right? So not just his own congregation, but also Brady. So the technology is a key point. So many of our churches in some of those rural areas especially didn't keep up with the technology for whatever reason. Some of it was financial, some of it was by choice. But when something like this comes up, you got to do something different.
Yes, exactly. And that's exactly what Brady did. Again, thinking outside the box, and their church family continues to meet just as they always have.
That's the foundation side of this great story. Now let's hear from the folks who put that grant money to use. This is Julie Hoagland, who's a member of Brady United Methodist Church.
We were a 2-point charge, and then the other church that we were, that was in our charge, disaffiliated. So that kind of left us out alone, and Pastor Mike from North Platte had contacted the district and asked if there was a small church in the area that they could help. So then we just get our sermons from him. Now we do the rest of our service on our own. But so that's what it kind of caused the change, and it's going pretty well.
As I understand it, you were kind of out there by yourself.
We were, because there weren't any other small churches around that didn't disaffiliate that really needed someone to join together, and we couldn't afford to pay a full-time pastor, so.
And my understanding is the beginning of it, he was recording the sermon and sending it to you, but that just wasn't quite working right for the congregation. Tell me a little bit about that aspect of things.
Well, we were always, like he would record one Sunday and send it to us, and we would show it the next Sunday. So we were a Sunday behind all the time, and which wasn't terrible, but then when it got into Advent and Lent, when we're talking about, you know, Advent series stuff and Lent, then we kind of needed to be on the same sermon each week. So now they record Saturday nights and send it to us, and then we show it Sunday morning. I think hopefully maybe we'll eventually move to them just, you know, getting it from them on Sunday morning or whatever. But I don't think our congregation wants to give up our identity, as far as we like to do our own joys and concerns and you know, the extras of the service. So special music and that stuff.
Right. So you're not exactly live streaming from what they're doing, but you're taking a more immediate recording.
Yes.
And playing it. Okay.
And eventually we might live stream, but just depends.
The logistical challenges with that, like you said, of music, your own prayer time and everything. I understand that completely. So the Nebraska United Methodist Foundation got involved. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what your church went to them asking for and what they provided to help you do what you're doing now?
Okay. So actually a year ago, before we ever started this, we wrote a grant to get a sound. I'm going to call it a sound loop. I don't know what that's, you know, it would be so that people with hearing aids could hear better, and were granted money to do that. I think it was like $2,500. And so this year, and when we started this whole thing, I believe that the district provided us with a large TV, like when we started going to, and I don't know for sure where those monies came from. I don't know if they came through the foundation. It wasn't through a grant we wrote. But then we wrote another grant last fall and asked for another TV and a computer, and we have an iPad, and we're going to update our sound system and so forth. And we're granted almost $9,900, I think. So, which was a huge, huge thing for us. And just to get that technology in our sanctuary and to be updated is awesome. Just like when we're doing Advent series or Lenten series, you know, we always watched it on an older TV now, and now we have the 65-inch TV and it's just so much nicer. And when we tell people that, you know, we get Pastor Mike's sermons online, they're just, or we watch them on the TV, they're like, they look at us rather skeptically. And I said, but it works for us. And it's like he's almost there. We had one lady say, I just feel like I could raise my hand and ask him a question. That's how real it seems. So it's been an awesome thing.
And that's the story from the Brady UMC perspective. Now let's hear from North Platte United Methodist Church. This is Micah Dunn. Besides being an excellent worship leader, he serves as the church's communications director. He and Reverend Mike Evans from North Platte, along with a few others, had the idea to help other churches in their region. Here's Micah.
I grew up in a really small, rural-ish type of church, actually in our conference down at Lake in Kansas. And, you know, our attendance when I was a kid was like 100, 120. And just throughout the years and COVID and everything, you know, all of these and just small towns in general are getting smaller and smaller. You know, a tractor can do 20 times what it could 20 years ago today. And so, you know, I have this heart for these smaller and smaller communities, because that's where I grew up. And so I, working here at the church, loving my music, that kind of stuff, I've had in the back of my mind, well, what would it look like if we could help out a different church, you know? Because gosh, preaching, like getting a good sermon ready, that takes at least 10 to 20 hours if it's good. And, you know, and I've filled in a couple of times and that's a headache. And gosh, wow, if we could take that element alone, just that one little element, which not to hurt pastors' egos or anything like that, but if we could help out a smaller church with that particular element, then half of a pastor's job would be covered. And I know I had mentioned that to Pastor Mike, and he had kind of heard some different ideas and shared. So there's just kind of several of us thinking around this, right? And so I know Pastor Mike put a bug in the ear of District Superintendent Cindy Cargas. And anyway, with some of the different disaffiliations and rearranging of the cabinet, you know how that goes. Brady was going to be without a church. And so we just decided, hey, we've talked a lot about this. We know what it would be like to share a recorded message and have lay people in the congregation facilitate the service. Let's just try it. And so Pastor Mike had the wisdom to say, well, we'll go 3 months at a time. And about every 3 months, we'll check in, you know, and like really do overhaul adjustments. Obviously every week we're adjusting, but it started with a small investment of a TV and using their existing sound equipment, which, you know, from a worship leader's perspective, I had to cry a little bit inside, but beyond that, it was like, yeah, here we go. And we got it up there. They've been willing to be flexible and work with that. And they are just rock stars in the way that they facilitate worship. So, yeah.
I know they told me that it started off with you recording basically the sermon, and then the next week they would play it. And that was kind of getting behind. They were always a week behind, right? So you get into those liturgical times of year. So tell me how you all have shifted what you provide to them and how that's working.
Right. So during COVID, you know, we made some investments like many of the churches, and I'm sure the foundation helped with, to have better recording equipment. And so what we did with our recording equipment, we were already posting our messages to YouTube, you know, as kind of an archive and to our website. And so all I was doing in the first few months was putting a little cut on it. Sometimes Pastor Mike would do an extra, you know, minute or two specific addressed right to Brady, not to our congregation, but just a minute or two here or there. Or he might do a little clip for like announcement times or something like that. So then I'd go in and cut and edit, which really didn't add much to my time because I was already doing that to archive for us. So, which means you could add three or four churches onto this, right? Like even though it was only one, you know, it's just five more minutes, like, all right, swap out the North Platte logo, put in the Brady logo, you know, pretty simple, pretty straightforward stuff. And so, yeah, they'd watch a week behind. And so what we've transitioned to, North Platte invested in just a little bit of recording equipment to do our Saturday evening service. And so I'm just, what was taking me a week to do is now I'm just kicking out Saturday evening or first thing Sunday morning. And so then they walk in, we're using a shared cloud drive, and they import what they need to onto their presentation software, and get going. So it's pretty straightforward. And I'm sure the way where you're headed, actually, it's right there. That's one of the big projects. So we've kind of scaled it up over time. We started with what we called phase one, bare bones minimum. Phase two got us into being able to do on week stuff. And now we're working on what we're calling phase three. And that's where the foundation stepped in and really helped out, was very generous. And so we've got, they were using old Radio Shack speakers. I mean, Radio Shack isn't even in business, you know, but they're home speakers. So we've got some professional sound equipment in there. And professional scares people. Like, we're doing this all turnkey, right? You know, they're going to have little knobs to turn the volume up, and that's about it. But we've tried to do this as much as set it and forget it kind of things, you know, to be able to come in, turn the system on, it will sequence up and down, you know, for me to be able to share my knowledge there, then their volunteers can just come in and click the button. So just to turn the whole thing up and down, you know, that's how simple we're trying to make it. Wireless microphones, they'll be able to hear better. We're going to mount their existing TV and add another one into their sanctuary so that they can see even better, hear even better. And there's a little switcher in there to where they'll be able to switch live into our services to, this is going to be a little much if you don't know the word, or know what it is. I'm sure you do, Todd. But we're going to switch to a decoder for them, which will allow them to get our live signal that we're already producing. Or they'll be able to pull down an earlier service and just incorporate it into their presentation software. Either way. So they're going to have a couple options, a little bit of redundancy built in there. So it's a little fail safe. And it seems to be working pretty well. They'll have a DVD player in it, everything. And they just click of a button to switch what's on the TV. So if they want to go from hymn lyrics to the message, to the live feed, to, hey, look at this clip on this DVD, you know, they can do that. And that's in this relationship. And that's one of the things I want to emphasize. Brady has not lost their identity. Yeah, they're getting a message from North Platte, but you know, we hand them our service orders as we develop them, like for their bulletins. And we just insert suggestions. Sometimes they change the hymns. Sometimes they add a little extra or do something a little different. They still do some liturgical items that we don't do at North Platte. But they incorporate them, what works for them, and it's still their service, their identity. They just happen to have a preacher on a screen for that 20-ish minutes of worship. It's all kingdom work, right? Like, we're producing it for our congregation, right? But if it can go on and stretch and benefit others, like, yeah. And what's great is within our vicinity, and I'd say you could do this up to, you know, maybe driving an hour away from North Platte in any direction. You know, there's a sense of being relative. You know, Pastor Mike's going to know what's going on in the area, and that will what happens in North Platte will likely affect Brady. What happens in Curtis will affect Ogallala and all these areas. And so to find a way to integrate some of the hard things, you know, the hardest part is creating that message, but taking that pressure off, man, I think there's a lot of potential worship leaders and that kind of folk out there that could facilitate worship in a much, much easier way. And I'm so grateful for the foundation believing in that vision and trying to support that.
It's all kingdom work. Micah is absolutely correct. I want to close by giving Christine Roberts from the Nebraska United Methodist Foundation just a few more minutes. She shared how the foundation is more than just the endowments and charitable end-of-life giving that it and other similar organizations are so well known for.
Of course, the foundation is huge on endowments, educating congregations, on legacy giving, especially this time right now with the generational transfer of wealth happening. Mm-hmm. It's imperative that churches invite us in to educate their congregation on, again, ways that they can think outside the box to leave a legacy gift for their local church. Because endowments will be very important for churches to survive into the future. But yes, we're not all about endowments. That's very important for people and churches to know about, but we also Sure. want the ministries to be happening now, for people to be excited about going to church now and what the church can do for the community to help it grow. And so, again, that's what we're here for, the legacy giving, the endowments, but your annual budget too, your annual giving. We're here to educate your congregation on all of it.
And to help churches better fulfill their mission in their communities, the foundation is making some changes to how it conducts these grant processes so that local churches have more opportunities to seek funding for ministries. Again, here's Christine Roberts.
We realize sometimes churches are very busy, get behind. Maybe they wanted to apply for this grant and it didn't happen in time. We're actually starting this year of offering this ministry grant twice a year. And the application is open now for the spring portion of this.
So let's walk through the process then, just from the application standpoint. So when does it open and close, and what are those two windows?
So this, again, it's new.
Yep, totally.
Just this year. So
we're talking about new ministries. It always seems appropriate that we're talking about some new things with the foundation too.
Exactly. We're trying to do things new here. We're not doing things the way they've always been done before. So it's the same program, the ministry grant program, but the application was posted on our website on January 2nd. And it's open now, and the deadline is March 31st to get the applications to us. And then at the April board meeting, the stewardship committee will meet, the board will meet and approve whoever applied for those. So I just want to make sure that people know that we are doing that now. It was in our e-newsletter and on our website, mm-hmm. but I want to make sure people know that we're doing things differently too, and it's open now.
And then there's the second wave, which was kind of the traditional one, which opens when and closes in?
It opens July 1st.
Okay.
For the fall ones, okay. That closes, then the applications would need to be in September 30th.
I hope the stories in this episode helped you learn just a little bit more about how the Nebraska United Methodist Foundation can help churches, in Nebraska in particular, expand their ministries. I want to thank all of my guests for their help in this episode of telling these great stories, and I wish all of you who apply in the future good luck as you seek some funding to enhance your ministries. In Layman's Terms is a podcast sponsored by the Great Plains Conference of the United Methodist Church and by me, your host, Todd Seifert. If you like what you've heard in this episode, please go rate us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you're listening. It helps others find us. And if you're so inclined, please share the link to this podcast on your social media channels. Our music and sound effects come via subscriptions to Universal Production Music and to Storyblocks. You can find archived episodes on the conference website at www.greatplainsumc.org/podcasts or on my website, toddseifert.com. Please email me with any questions or comments to tseifert@greatplainsumc.org, and I'll do my best to respond as quickly as possible. Thank you for listening, and until next time, please do what you can to help make more disciples of Jesus Christ. You can play a small part in helping change a life.